Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Trinity Sermons. This week, we're continuing our series, Heroes of Faith, where we take a deep dive into the lives of those who are listed in Hebrews chapter 11. And today, we come to the first name in that list, a guy that we actually don't know a whole lot about, and his name is Abel. And even though the Bible never actually records a single word that Abel says, the author of Hebrews tells us that by faith, Abel still speaks to us today. So what is Abel saying? And why does it matter to us here and now? Those are some of the questions that Rob tackles in today's teaching. So let's tune in to find out more.
Today's first reading is from Genesis chapter 4, verses 1 to 10. Adam made love to his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. She said, "With the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man." Later, she gave birth to his brother Abel. Now, Abel kept flocks and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. And Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, you will not be accepted. Will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it." Now Cain said to his brother Abel, "Let's go out to the field." While they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is your brother Abel?" "I don't know," he replied. "Am I my brother's keeper?" The Lord said, "What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground." Our second reading is from Hebrews chapter 11, verse 4. By faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, Abel still speaks even though he is dead. The word of the Lord.
Well, if you are ever in London, England, you must visit Westminster Abbey. Not only is Westminster Abbey just a beautiful sanctuary, an amazing church, but you may know this, it is also a mausoleum, which means that all throughout Westminster Abbey, under the floor, are buried some of the amazing heroes of England's history, which means you could be walking around Westminster Abbey and just, taking in the sights, and you look down and you realize, oh my goodness, I am standing on the grave of, Sir Isaac Newton, or I'm standing on Edgar Allan Poe, or I'm standing on Charles Dickens, or I'm standing on William Wilberforce or Queen Elizabeth I, right? These are all heroes. They were heroes of the arts. They were heroes of leadership. They were royalty. They were scientists. Now, in the 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews, some people call that chapter the Westminster Abbey of the Bible. Because as you walk through Hebrews chapter 11, you step again and again on the names of great heroes of faith. Now, unlike the heroes in Westminster Abbey, many of which were powerful and rich and had incredible influence, the heroes that we find in Hebrews chapter 11 were just ordinary people who lived by faith, and that's what made them heroes. And so today we're continuing our teaching series, which we're calling Heroes of Faith, where we're going through Hebrews chapter 11. And last week we got started by looking at just the very beginning of Hebrews chapter 11, verses 1 to 3, where we were able to hopefully answer the question, what is faith, that overused word faith, what does it actually mean anyways? But today, we step foot on the very first tomb, the very first name in this hall of faith, and the person's name is Abel. Why is Abel in the Abbey? What is so great about Abel that he's recognized as a hero of faith? The Bible actually doesn't record one single word that Abel ever spoke, and yet today we're going to see he is still speaking. And this is what we read, just read. By faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offering. And by faith, Abel still speaks, even though he is dead. Three times, Abel's faith is commended, but the question still remains is why? I don't understand this. Well, that's why we had to have two readings this morning. And if you kind of leave your finger in Hebrews chapter 11 and you flip all the way back to the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 4, that's where we find Abel's story in its entirety. Now, just to remind you a little bit about the book of Genesis. The book of Genesis is a book of origins. It tells us the beginning of the universe in chapter 1. In chapter 2, it tells us the beginning of humankind. In chapter 3, it tells us the beginning of sin, when Adam and Eve rebelled against God and were kicked out of the garden. And then in chapter 4, it tells us the beginning of the fallout from sin. And that is where we pick up the story of Cain and Abel, Genesis chapter 4. And I feel like even before we dive into this, I want to just acknowledge many times when we come to a story like this, we're like, how are we even supposed to read a story like this? Are we expected to believe this is true? Like, is that what I'm supposed to believe, that this is literal truth? Or is this just a myth that means absolutely nothing? And I would say, again, we talked about this a while ago in a different series. On the one hand, we know the Bible is inspired by God and it is filled with timeless truths. But on the other hand, we also know the Bible is filled with different kinds of writing and literature, different genres. Genesis chapter 4 is a very unique genre. It is deeply theological, but also highly, highly symbolic. And so on the one hand, we definitely say that it is true, but on the other hand, we may not have to read it as literal truth. Listen, you can read it however you want to read it. And in some ways, it doesn't really matter, because in the end, the same lesson comes out. And the lesson is this, is that Abel's life shows us what it means to live by faith. So flipping back to Genesis chapter 4, we read this, that Adam made love to his wife Eve. She became pregnant. She gave birth to Cain. She said, hey, with the help of the Lord, I brought forth a man. And later she gave birth to his brother Abel. Abel kept flocks. Cain worked the soil. That makes Abel human number 4. He's human number 4, right? There was Adam, there was Eve, there was Cain, and there was Abel. Abel's job was to care for the flocks. Cain looked after the produce, the work of the land, I guess you could say. Abel's name, by the way, do you know what the word Abel means? It means vapor. It means mist, as in poof, here today and gone tomorrow, right? Talk about a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, I don't know what parent would name their kid Vapor, but it's true. He didn't last very long at all. Genesis chapter 4 is full of firsts. It's got the first mother, the first pregnancy, right? It's got the first family we ever see. It's got the first dysfunctional family we ever see. It's got the first murder that ever happens, the first martyr as well. But also in Genesis chapter 4, we have the first person who ever lived by faith. Now you might say, whoa, Rob, you said that Abel was person number 4. What about Adam and Eve? Didn't they live by faith? Well, this is the interesting thing. You see, it was a little different for Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve, we're told, lived in the garden with God. The Bible tells us they walked with God and they talked with God. So there was this sense in which they had this, there was this manifestation of God that they interacted with in the Garden of Eden in such a way that I would say Adam and Eve didn't have to live by faith. They could actually in some ways live by sight. God was there. He was manifest. His presence was there, but not true for Cain and Abel. By the time Cain and Abel come on the scene, they've been kicked out of the garden. And now they can't see and interact with God in the same way that Adam and Eve did. And so now the only way they know about God is what Adam and Eve told them about the stories. And so they have to live not by sight, but by faith. And I think they're the very first ones to do this. There is this branch of biblical studies. It's called hermeneutics. Sounds like a disease. But really, what it means is hermeneutics is the study of how we interpret the Bible. And there's this one principle in the study of hermeneutics called the law of first mention. And the law of first mention means that the first time in the Bible that you come across a certain concept, then that kind of sets the meaning for that concept for the rest of the Bible. And so here we have the very first instance of someone living by faith. And that, of course, then sets the tone for how faith is used from here on out. So what does Hebrews 11 and Genesis 4 teach us about Abel's faith? Well, first of all, it tells us about Abel's faithful sacrifice. By the way, you've got sermon notes, as always, if you want to follow along, if that helps you remember. So it says, by faith, Abel brought a better offering than Cain did. Or in Genesis 4, we read, in the course of time, Cain brought some fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord, and Abel brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of the flock. So this, again, first, speaking of first, this looks to be the very first service of worship that ever took place. And you'll notice that it happens at a specific time and in a specific place with a specific offering. It's a specific time because we're told that in the course of time, at an appointed time, Cain and Abel knew it was time to go to church. And it was a specific place. They brought their offerings to a specific place. And then, of course, they brought a specific offering with them. Now, this is the first time, but again, the pattern repeats over and over again throughout the Bible, even to our day today. You know, Israel worshiped at specific times at certain festivals, and they came to a specific place, like the temple, on a pilgrimage to the temple, and they brought with them specific offerings that were appropriate for that festival. Even today, we have this rhythm. You come on a specific time, a Sunday morning, to a specific place here at Trinity Streetsville, and you bring something with you too, and that is your offering, your sacrifice of praise and thanksgiving to God. So Cain and Abel, they both came to the same spot. They both came at the same time, but they brought different offerings. Cain brought some of the fruit of the soil. Abel brought fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. Guys, I've struggled with this reading all week, but I think this whole thing hinges on these sacrifices, right? What is the difference between these two sacrifices? Because we're told that the Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favor. But why? Why? You must have asked that question. What's the difference between these two sacrifices, right? Why is bringing a lamb better than bringing crops from the field? And even if that was better than the crops from the field, then how on earth were Cain and Abel supposed to know which one was better? This is a complicated thing. And I've got a theory that, I'm going to share with you today. I think there's other ways of understanding this, but this is where I landed this week. And to figure it out, again, you need to actually turn back one chapter from Genesis chapter 4 to Genesis chapter 3. After their fall into sin, right, Adam and Eve realized that they were naked, and they realized they needed to cover themselves up. And so what was their idea to cover themselves up? They used fig leaves, right? So they went and they took some crops from the field, leaves from the tree, and they sewed them together and they used them, they made them themselves, fashioned them to cover up their nakedness, right? I mean, it was a creative solution. Looks pretty stylish, you know? But it wasn't enough to cover their sins. Because we then go on to read, God says, no, you can't do it that way. You can't cover your sin that way. You need something costlier than that. So God provides them with a different covering. We're told that he gave them garments of skin, which meant that some poor animal had to die in order to cover up their sinfulness. Meaning that animal was the first blood sacrifice of the Bible. I know this language of blood and sacrifice and all that might be a little much for some of us, but I think it's actually critical to establish what's going on here. And that is, we learn three lessons about sin from this. The first is that sin requires a covering, right? After all humanity became aware of their after sin, they realized they were vulnerable, that they were guilty, they needed to be covered up. Secondly, they learned that you cannot cover your own sin, your own self, in your own ways, right? Fig leaves stitched together, the work of human hands, that is not enough to cover our sin. And thirdly, it shows that this covering for sin, yes, requires, I know, kind of gross, but it requires the shedding of blood, some innocent blood. And this theme, again, is going to repeat over and over and over again throughout the whole Bible, but it begins here in Genesis chapter 3. So now that we've looked back at Genesis 3, we can go forward again to Genesis 4, and we can see that there were different kinds of offerings that had different meanings to them. So Abel brought the right kind of sacrifice, right? It was a blood offering. Cain brought a fruit offering, which was not what God required. Now listen, if you read Leviticus 19, you will see there's many times and places later on in Israel where grains and crops and fruit were very appropriate and wonderful offerings to bring to God at certain times and for certain purposes. But apparently, for whatever reason, apparently this was not one of those times, right? The offering that was meant for this time was meant to be a sin offering, and so it required a blood sacrifice. But that wasn't the only issue. The other issue was also the quality of the sacrifice that was being brought. Abel brought the best of his flock, the firstborn of his flock, we are told, and Cain just brought, quote, some of the crops from the field. So Abel's offering cost him something, cost him dearly. Cain's, not so much. So again, everybody, I apologize if this makes you squeamish. I don't usually preach so much on blood and guts, but I really think this is where this goes. And in a nutshell, this is what we've got. Abel offered what God wanted, and Cain offered God what Cain wanted. Or another way to put it this way is Abel approached God on God's terms, and Cain approached God on his own terms. And ever since that moment, there have been two different ways people can approach God. The first is the way of Abel, right? It's coming to God by faith, not trusting in anything that you've done, but trusting in the blood that was shed to cover your sin. Whether that blood referred to the Old Testament system of sacrificial offerings, where, you know, the high priest on the Day of Atonement would slaughter a lamb for the sins of all the people, or ultimately whether that points forward to Jesus Christ, who gets called, again, by John the Baptist, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. That is one way to approach God. It's the way of Abel. It's the way of sacrifice. It's the way of faith in the blood of Jesus. The other way to come to God is the way of Cain, and that's coming to God on your own terms, bringing what you want to bring, right? Doing what you want to do, believing what you want to believe, but relying on your own efforts. The way of Cain kind of says, oh, there's lots of different ways to come to God. All roads lead to God. So just do what you want and bring what you want. But Jesus would even say, wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it, but small is the gate and narrow is the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. The way of Cain is wide, but it leads nowhere. The way of Abel is narrow, but it leads to life. And of course, these are still the only two ways that people come to God today. I mean, if you could think about all of the things that we might offer to God, wonderful, beautiful things, beautiful buildings, moving liturgies, wonderful songs of worship like David just led, incredible acts of service. We can bring all these things to God. All of them are valuable. All of these things are beautiful. I'm actually sure that when Cain brought his fruit to God, it was beautiful. It was probably this big spray, like amazing, like display. But if we leave out the sacrifice of Jesus, then we missed it. We've missed the heart of the gospel, and our faith has no power to heal us. has no power to help us, no power to save us. Hebrews 9:22 says, without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness of sins. All the religious talk over the past 10,000 years and all the kind of differences, I think, between Christianity and other world religions, they really boil down to these two things. There is the way of Abel and there is the way of Cain. And when we push aside the sacrifice of Jesus and rely on our own efforts, then we're walking in the way of Cain. So that's why Abel is the first hero of faith and the model for all faith that follows, because he shows us that in order to come to God, we have to come with faith, not faith in ourselves, but faith in the Lamb that has been provided. So there you go. That's the first big thing that we learn about Abel's faith, that Abel had this faithful sacrifice. But secondly, we're also going to learn about Abel's righteous standing. Righteous standing, what does that even mean, right? Well, here's what the text says. It says, by faith, Abel was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. Now, what does it mean to be righteous? You're so righteous. Righteous means that you are in right standing with God. It means that you've been accepted by God, that you're living in harmony with God, that you have met God's standard and his perfect standard even. And then we would say, well, how can anyone meet God's righteous standing, his perfect standard? It's a good question. None of us do. The Bible even says in Romans 3:23 that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. In other words, no matter how hard we try, we're all going to miss this mark. But that's actually the point, right? Abel teaches us that we don't have to earn this righteousness, right? It's actually given to us as a gift when we come to God in faith. I was trying to think of a way to explain this. This is kind of an analogy I think might work. Imagine, if you will, a very prestigious university, right? They're hosting their graduation ceremony. And the president of the university steps to the podium and he says something that's actually quite shocking to everyone in attendance. He says, today we are granting degrees to all students in attendance, right? Not based on their performance, but purely as a gift. Even if you failed every class, even if you never completed any of your assignments, you're still receiving a diploma today completely free. Because why? Because I, as the president of the university, I have the authority to give it to you. I don't think that's going to bode well for the university's accreditation process the next time it rolls around. But anyways, imagine this happened, right? The crowd is stunned. Some students, as you can see, they're absolutely overjoyed. They can't believe it, right? They don't deserve the gift. They're grateful to receive the gift. They come up and they hug the president. They're so glad. But others, the ones who worked tirelessly for 4 years or 5 years, they're outraged. They say, this is not fair, right? We earned our diplomas. Why should someone who failed not get one? And that is the difference between what theologians call earned righteousness and imputed righteousness. You ever say the word imputed with me? Imputed. It's just a neat word to say. I like that word. Right. Earned righteousness is like the students who studied hard, they passed every test, and they feel they've earned this diploma, this award, by their own efforts. But imputed righteousness is like the undeserving students who failed, but because of the president's love and grace and authority, they were given a diploma anyway. They didn't earn it. They received it as a gift. This is why Abel's story is so, so powerful. God didn't declare Abel righteous because of his performance, because he earned it. It wasn't because Abel was a nice guy and Cain was, you know, miserable. We don't even know that's true. We know nothing about their personalities. We have nothing to go on. Abel wasn't necessarily kinder. Cain didn't necessarily have a bad attitude. In fact, all we know is that Abel's faith alone led God to declare him as righteous. And again, this is crazy, but that's the same for you, and it's the same for me today. We get declared righteous, not because of what we do, but because of what Jesus has done. You see, in God's kingdom, In God's kingdom, no one can pass the test. No one graduates on their own. We have all failed the assignments of life. We've lied, we've cheated, we've hurt others, we've rebelled against God. No matter how hard we try, we can't meet God's perfect standard. But here is the good news. Jesus took the test for us. Jesus aced every subject, and he hands us his perfect record. He even died for us as a way of saying, there, I have done absolutely everything now on your behalf. Take my righteousness. I give it to you as a gift. That is imputed righteousness. Actually, very important to know that the book of Hebrews was actually written to a group of Jewish Christians. They were Jewish, they became Christians, but they were getting persecuted, and they were like, maybe we should just go back to the old ways, to the old rituals, to the old rules, to the old schemes, and the author of Hebrews is like, no, don't go back to that, because Abel shows us that righteousness has never been about your human effort. It's always been about faith. Faith. The problem is that as human beings, we are addicted to wanting to earn it ourselves. We don't want the diploma unless we've earned it. Unless we feel like we've earned God's love and God's favor, we don't want it. In fact, for some of you, the idea of being completely dependent on God's grace and goodness towards us is actually offensive. It goes against our instincts. But God's approval is not something you can achieve with effort. It's something that we receive by faith. And this was the greatest learning in the life of the Apostle Paul, the guy who wrote most of the New Testament. This was what he said. It's by grace that you have been saved. It's through faith. And this is not from yourselves. It is a gift of God. It is not by works, so that no one can boast. That is the beauty of the gospel. That's also why it's so hard for some people to accept the gospel. So I just got to say, how about you? When you came to God, or maybe right now you're seeking God, what are you bringing with you? Are you trusting in your own efforts, your own good works? Are you trying to earn it like Cain or like Abel? Are you willing to just humble yourself and admit your need and trust in the sacrifice that's been provided for you instead? The last thing we learn about Abel's faith is that it is a lasting story. Again, the writer of Hebrews tells us, by faith, Abel still speaks even though he is dead. There's an old saying that dead men tell no tales. But Abel's story proved that's not true. The story has echoed throughout thousands of years, across generations, and into our hearts this morning. Abel's life was cut short, no doubt. Cain, his jealousy, attacked him, killed him. Some people try to excuse Cain by saying, oh, it was the firsts. He didn't know that when you hit somebody in the head with a rock that it will kill them. Let's give him a break. But no, he had just seen what happens when you inflict such a wound on an animal, on this lamb. He had just seen his brother's sacrifice. He knew very well what was going to happen when he delivered the same wound to his brother. So he knew what he was doing. God even tried to help Cain out and kind of give him another chance. He basically says, Cain, you know, if you do well, you'll be accepted. You can learn. You can try again. But Cain refuses. He's full of bitterness and rage. And pretty soon, this guy whose name was Vapor is vaporized. Do you remember how God asked Adam and Eve, where are you? Well, now he asks Cain, where is your brother? But God already knew. He could hear Abel still. Listen, do you hear that? Your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Your brother's still speaking. He is still speaking today. This guy who doesn't have one single recorded word in all the Bible is still speaking. He's still telling his story. And what is he saying? Listen, what is he saying? The righteous will live by faith, not by works, not by effort, but by trusting in the sacrifice God provided. Abel's not the only one still speaking. Cain is still speaking too. Abel's story speaks to us of the beauty of faith, but Cain's story speaks to us about the destructiveness of jealousy, about the futility of trying to earn your own way to God. What about your story, though? Let's end with this. What story is your life speaking to your friends to your family members, to your children, your grandchildren, to your coworkers, your classmates, right? Even after you're gone, what story are you speaking? I found this quote. You're writing a gospel, a chapter each day, by deeds that you do, by words that you say. Men read what you write, whether faithless or true, say, what is the gospel according to you? Is your life telling Abel's story of sacrifice, righteousness, and trust in God's grace? Or is your life telling Cain's story of pride, rebellion, and self-reliance? What is the gospel according to you? Today you've got a chance to write a brand new chapter in your life, right? You have the chance to walk a path of faith, the way of Abel. Not by trusting in your own efforts and your own achievements, but by trusting in the sacrifice that was made for you. Hey, it could be that, like Cain, you've gone the wrong way, but God is calling you back, just like he called Cain back to get right with him. Don't harden your hearts like he did. Don't cling to your own pride. Instead, by faith, trust in Jesus. Choose the narrow way and receive the righteousness that only God can give. Thanks be to God. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Trinity Sermons. This sermon was recorded at Trinity Church Streetsville in Mississauga, Ontario on January 12th, 2025.